217-367-9575. And now stay tuned for Disability Beat. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Carol Rosen, who is the advocacy program specialist for the Arc of Illinois, and self-advocate Da Wen Mei, who are going both here to talk about the Rev Up Project. But first, disability news for the week of June 26, 2023. The Office for Civil Rights at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services has announced the launch of a new national initiative project for the rights of people with disabilities to be supported to live in the community. It's the case known as Olmstead versus LC instigated a shift away from institutions in favor of serving people with disabilities in community-based places. However, hundreds of thousands of individuals nationwide remain on waiting lists to access services in the community more than 20 years after the law was declared legal. The new initiative will coincide with the 24th anniversary of the Olmstead decision. The effort will strengthen enforcement and compliance through the Office for Civil Rights by addressing complaints received by their office and other barriers to community living. The Civil Rights Office will assist those receiving funding from Health and Human Services to understand their obligations under the ADA and provide technical assistance and outreach to educate providers on their responsibilities and assure that people with disabilities know their rights. According to Secretary of Health and Human Services Xavier Becerra, quote, 24 years ago, the Supreme Court affirmed that people with disabilities have a right to live and receive services where they live. The landmark ruling has enabled millions of Americans to have greater independence, autonomy, and opportunities to participate fully in their communities. Progress has been made, but there is still much work to be done. This new initiative from OCR creates additional opportunities for people with disabilities to live, work, and participate in their communities, end quote. In addition, Melanie Fuentes Rainier, the director of the Office for Civil Rights, said, quote, we welcome information from the public about individuals and systemic Olmstead compliance issues that would benefit from OCR's investigation, technical assistance, and enforcement activities. If you believe that a person with a disability has been denied access to community-based services and supports, you may file a complaint with HHS OCR, end quote. HHS said it also expects to propose new regulations later this year to clarify disability rights protections under Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act. According to findings published recently in the European Journal of Special Needs Education, adults with intellectual disabilities enrolled in a post-secondary education program saw significant improvement in IQ after 4.5 years of participation. Researchers administered the Wechsler Adult Intelligence Test with participants during the third year of the study and again after 4.5 years. Students who participated in the post-secondary program saw gains in IQ scores. Participants in the study not enrolled in post-secondary programs remained stable. The study authors wrote in their findings, quote, our study is the first to indicate the cognitive and intellectual benefits of a post post-secondary education program for adults with ID beyond adaptive behavior, social, and employment aspects, end quote. The IQ improvement was seen for students with a variety of scores at the start of the study, according to researchers, but they said the most striking results were among those who were pursuing a bachelor's degree through their post-secondary program. Said Hafziba Lifshitz, a professor of special education at Bar-Ilan University who led the study, said, quote, among those students studying for a bachelor's degree, IQ recorded the second time exceeded the cutoff point of the ID definition, which is between 70 and 75 points. They reached 80 and some higher. This is an amazing development, end quote. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development is asking for public comment as it works to revise regulations in Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. Section 504 bars discrimination on the basis of disability in a variety of circumstances, including in programs receiving funding from the Housing and Urban Development. HUD said that many changes have occurred in the housing industry since rules were originally issued in 1988. Also, HUD said there is an increased demand for housing in community-based settings since the 1999 Supreme Court ruling in Olmstead versus LC. According to Demetria L. McCain, Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for Fair Housing and Equal Opportunity at the agency, quote, inclusive communities and accessible, affordable housing are at the core of HUD's mission. Modern standards for accessible program design must reflect advances in building practices and technology. Hearing from the public, particularly stakeholders most directly impacted, is an integral part of HUD's rulemaking process, end quote. HUD is most interested in input on how the rules should account for advances in accessible design, the use of websites and other technology and auxiliary aids and services, including assistive technologies. They are also examining the possible adoption of an updated federal accessibility standard. The agency is also asking stakeholders to comment on how the lack of affordable, accessible, and integrated community housing impacts people who are at risk of institutionalization and those trying to move out of group homes or other facilities. HUD is accepting public comment until July 24th before proposing changes to the rule. Public comment can be given at federalregister.gov. And finally, according to a new report from our friend, advocate, and journalist Ed McManus, the administrator in charge of clinical services at yet another state-operated developmental center, this time Mabley Center, located in Dixon, Illinois, Patricia Fizikas described her experience of 9.5 years as, quote, an abusive relationship with the administrative team, end quote. She also said that she believes nothing will change until the administrators are replaced. According to Fizikas, quote, the system is broken and staff know if they complain, they will be retaliated against. If you visit Mabley, you will witness abused and neglected individuals being cared for by verbally abused and neglected staff, end quote. And that's the news for this week. You are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and I'm joined today on the phone by two folks that are representing a program at the Arc of Illinois, and I guess some other places as well. Carol Rosen, who has been on the program before, she is the advocacy program specialist at the Arc of Illinois and also has been the head of the Going Home Coalition for a number of years, also a parent. Lots of different roles that Carol plays in her life, and also Dawen May, who is on the a primary person on what is called the Rev Up Project, and both of them are here to talk about that program. So welcome to the show,
Carol. Thank you so much, Vicki.
Sure. Why don't we start with Dawen May? And Dawen, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, and then we'll let Carol introduce herself.
Hi, my name is Dawen May. I'm a resident of Boulder since I was 17. And I'm from Chicago, Illinois.
Mm-hmm. And you are a big advocate for people with disabilities voting, right? We're going to hear a lot more about that. How old were you when you started voting?
17.
Wow. How is that even possible? Don't you have to be 18 to vote?
I went with my parents.
Oh, okay. So you had a little experience in advance of being registered.
Yeah, sign up at 17 on voting day. I was 18.
Well, we'll ask more about that in a minute. Carol, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, too?
Thank you, Vicki. I am an advocacy program specialist at the Arc of Illinois. I manage two grants there. One is the Going Home Coalition, which had passed funding through the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities and is currently funded through the Coleman Foundation. So we're super excited to have them as our funders. I also am here as the Rev Up Grant Program Manager, and that is funded through the American Association of People with Disabilities and is around voter education and registration.
And it's my understanding that you and Dawen are working as a tag team, essentially, educating people on the importance of voting. And your target, I'm assuming, is folks with disabilities. Is that correct?
Yes. The focus of the grant is to get people with disabilities out there registered and voting. We know that people with disabilities are lagging behind people without disabilities in the sense that they are registered and voting at any and all elections. The good news is that compared to 2016, where only 56% of people with disabilities were voting, in 2020, that statistic went way up to 62%. And this is, Dawen and I want to see that continue to increase and as many people voting as possible. Justin Dart, who was the father of ADA, and he was the co-founder of the American Association of People with Disabilities, said that he wants people to vote as if your life depends on it, because it does. It's so essential that people with disabilities are out there and educated and civically engaged.
You know, I think that there are a lot of decisions being made for people with disabilities that would be very different if we had their voices heard at the ballot box. Wouldn't you think so, Dawen?
Yeah.
Yeah. So how is this, how are you providing this education to your target audience, to people with disabilities? Are you doing these in person? Are you doing them on Zoom? How is it working?
Right now, we've done both. Dawen and I, we've really teamed up in some interesting ways. I've been in person. He's been virtual. We've both been in person. We've both been virtual. Mm-hmm. The presentation is tailored to the group to whom we are presenting. This can be any transition programs where you have people who are 17-year-olds who want to register and then would be 18 and be able to vote during upcoming elections.
Mm-hmm.
It can be service providers. It can be nonprofits. We are very open to who the program can serve. It's basically any program that's serving people with disabilities.
So if you're doing a educational program in a location where people are living, are they able to register to vote at your training, or just give them assistance in figuring out how to do that?
Yes, we could do that with them on site. They do need to have at least their social security number. Depending on where and how you register, you need different forms of ID.
Right, right. So, but you provide a lot of good information about what exactly needs to happen mm-hmm. for them to do that. So what are the challenges for people with disabilities to be able to vote and express their voice at the ballot box?
Darwin, do you want to answer that? Okay, do you want me to grab it then?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Darwin. You know, we talk about in our presentation about how to keep your vote your own. And if people need support when they're placing their ballot, we want to make sure that they have that ability. So mm-hmm. we also discuss that. There are other issues of accessibility. So one of the things that Darwin does when he goes to vote is he uses a touch screen. We also want to make sure that if people are wheelchair users, as is my daughter, as is Darwin, and a ton of people that are participating in this, you know, that there are accessible there's accessible parking there, people who could read you the ballot. We also want to make sure that, you know, people may have their voting decisions written down, and that's a possibility on a platform called Ballot Ready. So you can print out a mock ballot, but that makes sure that, like, if people are there to support you, you can be sure that they're not going to change any of the information that you want.
That's a really good point. I think they mm-hmm. print, you can go to your local Secretary of State website and also mm-hmm. print out a ballot there. And that definitely is a strategy that my daughter uses when she goes to vote.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that.
That's a good one. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that transportation can be a real challenge mm-hmm. as well. Are there other things that I'm not thinking of?
Darwin, do you have anything that you'd want to add in terms of making sure that you have accessibility at the polling place?
You gain car pace and get to your location.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's a great point. So one of the things that Darwin is mentioning is that having access to knowing where to go to vote and what locations there are to go to vote. At.
Yeah, in our community, it's changing always.
Oh, yeah, I go online and check the location before I go.
Very smart to go online and check the location, and then you hopefully end up at the right place then.
We also have some QR codes that, Vicki, you may be able to post on the Facebook page that'll help people follow up with aiding them in knowing where the location is and even being able to register to vote or to register to vote by mail.
Yeah, I'd be more than happy to do that.
Thank you.
In Chicago, you can early vote and you can go anywhere to vote.
Oh, right. Okay.
I think that's true in most locations. Yeah, not just Chicago. We can do that in Champaign County too. As long as, you know, there are fewer locations that are early voting, but it's still, you know, more convenient than standing in a long line on election day. That's for certain.
Yeah. I always early election because they're shorter lines.
Do you usually vote in person, Darwin, or do you vote by mail? What's your preference?
I vote in person. Only time I vote to mail because of COVID.
Yeah, well, lots of us did that during COVID,
but
for sure.
After that COVID is over, I went back in person because that's the easiest way because you have a system.
And do I understand correctly that you are an election judge?
Yeah.
And what do you do as an election judge? What is that job?
I basically jump all over the board.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
I jump all over the board.
Oh, you jump all over. You do lots of different things, huh?
I check people in.
Mm-hmm.
I direct people when they don't know when to go.
Mm-hmm.
So. And don't you show them how to use the machine also, or talk to them and tell them?
If they want to use the machine, then if they don't know, they will ask. But a lot of people know how to use the machine already.
I would imagine, Darwin, that people with disabilities who come in and see you there sitting and working as an election judge makes them feel much more comfortable about placing their vote.
Yeah.
They're not going to be as shy asking you as they might be somebody else. Have you found that to be true?
Yes. I try to be them, so being more comfortable.
Yeah.
I think one of the great thing is that Darwin really educated me, and he told me about being an election judge, and I thought that was so interesting. It's a paid opportunity for people with disabilities to participate in, you know, the election.
Mm-hmm.
And then also through Going Home Coalition, we have three self-advocates who at one time have been election judges. And I thought that was really interesting. The other thing that is happening through the Rev Up grant that I really find really intriguing and very interesting is we also have people doing videos about when they registered to vote. And one of the people at this point, but we're going to go ahead and increase that, was talking about their experience registering to vote and how interested they were in their local legislator. So now we've reached out to the local legislator and they will have an opportunity to participate in their reelection campaign. So we're looking forward to increasing civic engagement through this grant as well in sort of interesting ways.
Yeah. Do you have a goal in mind as far as the percentage of people with disabilities who currently vote and what you'd like to see that number go up to?
That's a great question, Vicki. I would just keep saying, let's just keep, you know, moving forward with that. If
we want everybody to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Why not? Why not? You know, we should, as much as people need to be voting, because a lot of people who do not have disabilities are not voting either in elections. So I think it really speaks to the fact that, like, we cannot accomplish things in the disability community if we're not willing to engage and vote. So mm-hmm. I think it's really an important point to be made.
One thing that I've heard, you know, derogatory comments about people with disabilities voting is that, well, they're not, they don't have the skills to be able to vote. But the response that you would give, and I think, Darwin, what would you say to somebody who said this person doesn't have the skills to be able to vote?
They can vote electronic. So they got the different cup so you can vote with your mouth.
So. I know people without disabilities who vote based on the looks of the candidates.
Yeah, you can vote. you've been wronged by that slip and poke the machine they give you. You've been wronged. And you can vote any way you want with them.
Whether people agree with you or not. Yes.
I've learned so much through the people that we've presented to, who educate themselves on, you know, on voting issues at the time. We also provide people with platforms like Illinois Voter Guide, Vote 411, Vote Smart, Ballotpedia, which is considered to be more progressive, or Ballot Ready. But also, Darwin uses like Google and the media, you know, to inform them. And I strongly disagree with that and feel that's kind of a ableist remark to make towards people with disabilities. So I've learned from the people that I work with as self-advocates so much more than I knew then when I was coming into this grant.
Well, while we're talking about it, let's dispel a myth right now. Can people who have guardians vote?
Yes. In fact, that comes up a lot. That's a great question. Thank you for asking that. And they can, unless it is specifically written into their guardianship that they should not be entitled to the right to vote. But that, whenever I've spoken to lawyers on guardianship, it's so rare, like, to non-existent, that the people with guardianship are not allowed to vote. So I would imagine also that within people with disabilities thinking under their guardianship that they don't have the right to vote, that we dispel that myth, and that it's such an important right for Americans that they do have the right to vote. So even if you have a guardianship, you still have the right to vote.
Yeah, that is an important point to make. Is there anything else that we need to talk about that is an important point that you make or you found to be an important point when doing these presentations?
Well, I would just like to tell people how to get in touch with us, and that would be maybe something that we could put on the webpage too for Disability Beat.
Absolutely. Let's give it to them now, though.
Okay, you can reach me at Carol at the Arc of Illinois. It's Carole at the Arc of Ill.org. The Arc of Ill is spelled TheArcofIll.org. So these are where people can reach me. I'd be happy to take any further questions that come up from people listening to this call and look forward to connecting with people. These are opportunities to do a presentation with Darwin and I, or if you'd like to have someone in your organization that would like to present to me, that works too, or make a video on your experience on registering to vote, that's all available to you.
Great. That sounds like a wonderful opportunity. Is there a place where you have your schedule of presentations that's available for anybody to look at?
I don't. But
then let me know. Let me know when they happen. I'll put them on the Facebook page for Disability Beat. And even better, if you have any recorded presentations that people can look at, that might be a good resource as well.
Yeah, and I do want to put it out there again. If you are interested in registering to vote, I am very happy to walk you through that step by step until, you know, you're through the process. And we've done that with many people when we do in person. We've done it online with people who support people with disabilities. We've made inroads into making sure that people in state-operated developmental centers are registered to vote and continue to be. So there's all kinds of good progress that's being made.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the work that you do. Dawen, thank you for what you do. And Carol, always thank you for what you do as well. Carol, Carol Rosen and Dawen May of the Rev Up Project. So let's all rev up and vote. Thanks for joining me.
Exactly. Thank you.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week. No, I'm staying.